You're listening to Nightlight Radio Network. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, co-host of 21st Century Radio. We are happy to present this rebroadcast of our show on Nightlight. Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and our executive producer and research assistant is Laura Courtner. Our engineer is Anita Brockington. Now, we've all heard the song, This is the Dawning of the Age of Aquarius. We've been talking about the Age of Aquarius since at least the 1960s. But on this show, you've heard me explain that the dawning of an astrological age is actually a process that covers hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And many people have listed dates for the beginning of the Aquarian Age that are widely different. Tonight, we bring you a professional astrologer to explain this all to you. With the tumultuous events of 2020 and 2021, you may be wondering, where is all the harmony and understanding we are supposed to be experiencing in the age of Aquarius? Our guest is Daniel Fiverson, who will explain how the events of 2020 and 2021 are only the prelude for what will occur as this decade unfolds. In order to create the future we desire, we must know the past and understand the present. Daniel Fiverson is an author, lecturer, teacher, intuitive, living in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He is an evolutionary astrologer, and we'll find out what that means right at the outset. As he says, you already know what's of your life. Well, evolutionary astrology can tell you the whys. Daniel Fiverson is also a student of astrology, the I Ching, and Tarot. He is an award-winning photographer and a retired IT professional. He received his core astrological training through the work and teaching of Jeffrey Wolf Green and J.W.G. J.W.G. is a school of evolutionary astrology. His work employs mythology and astronomy to inform his astrology. He has written for numerous astrology journals and websites and was instrumental in the formation of the local National Council of Geocosmic Research chapter in Santa Fe. When not casting charts, he enjoys organic gardening, making herbal and mineral remedies, rock hounding, and hiking and biking the trails of the Four Corners region. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Daniel Fiverson.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Bob. When did I have time to do all that? It's what I want to know.
when do we all have that kind of time? But, you know, it flies. That's all I can say.
Yes.
You just multitask. That's been a big problem for me for a long time. So, just what is evolutionary astrology?
Well, evolutionary astrology is I guess we could call it a derivation or a kind of a version of modern psychological astrology, but it's a soul-centered perspective on our journey. It's the journey of the life of our lifetimes, from our journey from lifetime to lifetime. Mm-hmm. We have to look at it from the broadest perspective and understand that we are all soul projections, if you would. The soul projects itself down into time and space, down here where we are, into each of these lives, which are really just emanations of the soul itself. And I would suggest that, time is not linear, that all of the incarnations, all of the lifetimes that we go through really are not happening in a linear fashion. The universe is not linear, by any stretch of the imagination. The analogy I kind of use is, kind of a joke. Somebody once asked God, and I use that in its broadest, broadest definition, why did you create time? And he or she answered so that everything wouldn't happen all at once. this is the framework that we're moving through. And you know, I think it kind of explains how we can be regressed and have experiences from the past or see the future. Some people have bleed throughs, you know, spontaneously, but time is an illusion. But it's an illusion that we believe in, so it has become a concrete understanding, and it is useful. I don't want to say it's not useful, but it's kind of the way I approach it. So basically, we're looking at a progression, you know, of the soul learning about itself, just as in each of its emanations, each of its lifetimes, we are learning about ourselves, and we never go backward. Okay, mm-hmm. we're always moving forward. Evolution is not a theory; it's a fact, and everything that happens to us in one way or another is pulling us forward. Sometimes we go two steps forward and one step back. Sometimes we go one step forward and two steps back. But in all ways, we are always somehow progressing towards the future.
When did
does that kind of make sense?
Sure does. I was just wondering, when did you begin your interest in astrology, when you were what age?
Yeah, I started to study astrology back in the 1960s. If there's any other astrologers, anybody who knows astrology listening, it was when Uranus and Pluto were conjunct in the sign of Virgo.
Yes, I think you said that in your book.
Yeah,
I think you did. I'm sorry, I forgot.
Yeah, no,
that.
Go ahead.
Well, that's what the reason why I asked that question is that so many people that I have talked to in the past have ridiculed astrology to the nth degree. And yet, so many people who have studied astrology have made some very important, great successes in understanding who they are and why they're here. And that's one of the reasons why when I started to be interested in astrology, I used to think, reading it, of course, in newspapers, that's what astrology was. What is the problem in using astrology just in looking at it from a newspaper vantage?
Yeah, that's a great point. Let me speak to that. We're not just our sun sign. There are, you know, 10 planets, really 9 planets plus some dwarf planets as well, that, you know, populate our birth chart. Astrology, what has happened with most of Western astrology, I want to hold Linda Goodman, you know, hold her feet to the fire. She did a lot to advance the understanding and exposure of astrology, but from my perspective and some others, she did a lot to hurt it, because she made it into some kind of a cookbook recipe where you could pick up the newspaper or pick up an astrology book and look up your sun sign, and people would say, no, I'm not really like that. Mm-hmm. And so they would believe that astrology doesn't work. The way that I work with it is, it's not, you know, I think you alluded to it, it's not about taking the chart and overlaying it on you and saying, well, you were born with the sun in Aries, and so you're going to be impulsive and you may get angry and, you know, yada, yada, yada. That may be true, but that's really not who you are or what it's about.
That's right.
And as a matter of fact, because all the archetypes, you know, there are 12 zodiacal signs and 6 polarities, actually, of the 12 signs, because they are polarities, sometimes a sign represents or will express as its opposite. Sometimes somebody with a lot of Libra, which is the opposite of Aries, Libra is all about our connections with other people, our relationships, our relationship to ourselves. But it sometimes that relationship becomes its shadow expression, and it becomes Aries, and it becomes more self-centered and self-interest, that it expresses as its opposite. So there's all kinds of parameters that are in play, Bob, in terms of, you know, just picking up, you know, one little piece and trying to say, well, that's who I am. We're much more complex than that. And then there's another whole layer of understanding, because if we understand, you know, the course of evolution, you know, we come up from the animal kingdom. And in the animal kingdom, security is in the herd. Okay. When we first come into human life, you know, life, human existence, our security and our everything that we're reaching out for is also about that herd mentality. It's about to be like everybody else, to dress the same, to talk the same, you know, to basically be, you know, want to be like everybody else, want to learn how to play the game, want to learn how to get ahead. But there are two other evolutionary states besides this first consensus state. Just as a matter of record, that consensus state actually represents, you know, somewhere around 70% of the people on the planet. And it kind of explains why things are the way that they are and move so seem to move so slowly forward. Each of these states that I'm going to describe actually has three stages within it. You know, at the top of the consensus state are the people who not only have learned how to play the game, they're making the rules. The corporate, you know, the corporate magnates, the popes, the kings, the, you know, the people who are really pulling all the strings. But they get to the top of that mountain of materiality and consensus and having everything, and they still don't feel any more secure than they did when they started out, mm-hmm. because they've got a lot more to lose. You know, they actually are behind the guy maybe working on the assembly line in Detroit in terms of a sense of their own personal security, because they have so much, there's so much that they could lose. And they begin to ask the question, you know, there must be something more. And that opens up the search, the exploration, the inner journey to determine what else is there in life that really that was going to bring me a passion and fulfillment and purpose. And this is what Carl Jung called the individuated state, and it correlates to the planet Uranus, where we begin to recognize that, yes, I am like everybody else, but I'm not. I have certain traits. I can play the piano. I can dance. I can sing. I can draw. I can write. I can, you know, I have, you know, basic things that I have brought with me, you know, into this lifetime that make me unique and make me an individual. And as we move through that, that is the individuation process that's very Jungian. It's 20% of the people on the planet. And at the top of that individuated state are the artists, the visionaries, the poets, the musicians, the writers who are able to create their work and show it to us and say, look, there is something else. There's something that's more important, more fulfilling, more substantial, more essential in human life than just, you know, how much you can accumulate. And as we move through that individuated state, we begin to recognize that there are two kinds of law. There is man-made law, which correlates to Saturn and Capricorn, where, you know, and some of that we have to agree to certain things to live together in a society. We stop at a red light. We don't hurt other people. You know, we don't steal. You know, certain things that are consensus that we have to, you know, hold on to, but there are also certain laws, whether they're Ten Commandments, they're Hermetic principles, the Upanishads, you know, you're probably very familiar with them, that describe laws and a true nature of reality that's an absolute in any time and place. Yeah. It was true back in 800 BC, and it would be true in 3000 AD. As we begin to live according to that natural law, we begin to what Jeff Green calls spiritualized. By the way, JWG is Jeffrey Wolf Green.
Oh, thank you.
It's sometimes just abbreviated because it's such a mouthful. But at any rate, as we begin to live according to those natural laws, we begin to what Jeffrey called, we spiritualize. And that's not religion. The religions roll back in consensus. They're hell and damnation and patriarchy. And we begin to spiritualize and we begin to live according to that natural law. And we move into the third of the states. I don't know if I said it, 20% of the people on the planet are individuating approximately. And we move into a spiritualized state. And it's only been 5% of the population in the entire history of the planet. And at the top of that spiritualized state are the saints who have delivered the messages. And what's interesting is that from my understanding, all those messages were the same. They were just giving at a different time and place and directed a different mentality that taught us that there's really only one of us on the planet, that what happens to you happens to me, and what happens to you and me also happens to the ground that we stand on. And, you know, to come to that kind of understanding is the spiritualized state and to live in it.
Fine job. Fine job. We're going to take a break here. Good going there. I figured you could do a good job on that, Daniel. It's the kind of thing we need to talk about. We'll be back in just a few minutes here. This is, by the way, our guest is Daniel Fiberson. 2021 is the Aquarian Age, and an evolutionary astrology forecast available at Amazon.com. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Hello, this is Stanley Krippner. I'm professor of psychology at Saybrook Graduate School in San Francisco on behalf of 21st Century Radio, run by Dr. Bob Hieronymus. And I would certainly encourage listeners to stay tuned, because you will hear things on 21st Century Radio that you'll hear nowhere else on the airwaves.
Thank you for staying with us. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we return now to our guest. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah.
Bob, can I just add two thoughts before we move on?
Certainly you can.
Okay. The first is, this is the reason why Western astrology, for the most part, doesn't work for everybody, because the way the chart is going to work, the way the archetypes are going to work in that chart, are going to be where they are along that evolutionary scale. And it's important, because if somebody's, you know, just consensus, you know, what they really want is the BMW and, you know, all the fancy clothes. If somebody is spiritualizing, individuating, they want to, you know, maybe go to India and find a guru or find a teacher. But the other important thing to understand is that it's not a one note song. We're looking at a keyboard. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And we're playing chords across that keyboard. We could still have things back in consensus. Hey, I want to go out and have my margaritas Friday nights, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. We're not done with it until we're done with it. And that's why it takes so many lifetimes to really evolve and you know, to find what they call spiritual enlightenment. We're all moving towards it, and we're somewhere along that line of progression. But it's where we are on it that determines how your chart is going to work, how those planets are working for you. And, you know, what I do is, when somebody, you know, calls me for a reading, you know, I give them an intake form. I ask them some basic questions about their life, because, it's not a guesswork. It's not, you know, hey, give me your chart and I'm going to tell you, you know, everything about you. That's ridiculous. You know, like you said, it's not about the what's. It's about why what has happened has happened. So I ask everybody a question. You know, what is it you'd really like to, you know, take away from this reading? And that begins to give me some idea of where they are along that evolutionary progression.
So, of course, the book is called Is This the Aquarian Age? And so what does Aquarius mean?
Well, Aquarius is obviously a very big word. We'll start with the astrology of it. Aquarius is the 11th sign of the zodiac, and it is ruled by the planet Uranus. The fifth dimension song, you know, to a great degree, I think, has wound people up to have some expectation.
It sure did.
that's probably not going to happen, or it may. I shouldn't say it won't happen, but it's not going to happen in the order, you know, or on the timeline that most people are expecting,
mm-hmm.
because you know what we're going through, you know, right now is, you know, the experience of 6,000 or 400 years, you know, however you want to look at it, of cultural, you know, toxicity, and it's a healing crisis. It all has to come out. This is the role that Uranus performs. Aquarius, in the natural zodiac and the progression of the signs, follows the sign of Capricorn. And Capricorn is that consensus reality. It's ruled by Saturn. It's an earth sign. And in Capricorn and Saturn, things get crystallized. It's aging. It's maturity. Yes, we accomplish things. It's a very productive archetype, but we get stuck in it. We get stuck in that crystallization. Uranus comes along. Uranus is an air sign, and it's very active. And Uranus creates interruptions and disruptions in our lives that shatters that crystallized condition.
Mm-hmm.
A good example is, a number of years ago, I had a dear friend who had a stroke. And he described it to me. He said, I felt like I was a mirror. And I was shattered, and all of my pieces were laying on the ground around me. but I only picked up the pieces I wanted to keep. That's what Uranus does. And that's what Uranus is doing right now in the sign of Taurus. Taurus is about our essential resources. It's about our survival. It's about what is really important in our lives. And this is what COVID is doing for us, you know, whether we like it or not, is really distilling us down to what's really important, what's essential. So the Aquarian age, you know, is not going to all of a sudden blossom into unicorns and you know, 6 foot candy canes. It's going to be these kinds of experiences where we're going to be shaken. We're going to be, you know, really, you know, held and shaken really down to our core in order to shake out what it is about us that we individually need to change and what collectively needs to be changed.
Okay, now, so what is a celestial age in relationship to Aquarius and all the other charts?
Okay, one of the reasons there's so many questions about it, you know, is it the age of Aquarius is because it's been, you know, it's very difficult to measure it. What the ages are about is, I don't know if you're familiar with the spring equinox, the Aries equinox, because it's not spring in the southern hemisphere; it's fall in the southern hemisphere. But at 0 degrees of Aries at that equinox, the constellation that is behind the pole star, the North Star, determines the age that we're in. And the constellations are moving. They are also in their own cycle of rotation, just like the planets are around the sun and the Milky Way is around the center of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And so the ages have been marked by the constellation that shows up behind that pole star at 0 degrees of Aries point.
Well, then, continuing along these lines, is the precession of the equinoxes? After we put all of these together, I think we'll have a really good picture of what's going on.
Yeah, that is the precession, because the constellations are actually moving backwards. They're preceding. They're moving not clockwise. What's the word I'm looking for here? You know, in a backward direction. So the poles. It's some astronomy here. The Earth is actually at an 11 degree angle off center. It's not, you know, it doesn't, it's not, the poles are not pointed up and down. So there's a wobble around the North Pole, and it actually circles in the sky. And that's the precession of the equinoxes. It's where that North Node is pointing. The North Pole, mm-hmm. North Pole mm-hmm. is pointing at any given time, but it moves very, very slowly. It creeps. It's a 26,000 year cycle.
26,000 years. That reminds me, of course, I'm trying to think of a book. Hamlet's Mill. Did you read Hamlet's Mill?
I didn't, no.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's it's the one book that made sense to me after other people tell me to read it all the time. 600, 700 pages is a lot to read from that. But that's what I keep thinking about, is that process of the Hamlet's Mill. How does the Mayan calendar play into this?
Well, the Mayan calendar seems to also coincide with it. It's a totally different methodology. But one of the things that the Mayan calendar seems to have played out for us is the compression of time, because each of the stages of the Mayan calendar is 20 times faster than the age that came before it. And if you know, a good example is that, you know, in the last 50 or 60 years, the amount of new technology, the advancement of science, has actually progressed farther than in the last, you know, the previous 250 or 300 years. So that's the kind of example of it. You know, my life partner loves to tell me how, you know, everything just seems to be going so much faster. I tell her it's because we're getting old. But there's some truth to both of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's every time it seems to be compressed. And it is about that compression of time.
Well, the yugas then, as yugas, where do we move them? What are the yugas, and what do they tell us about the time that we are passing through?
Okay. The yugas are a direct correlation to that 26,000-year cycle, and they're made up of four different periods of time. And the it was Sri Yukteswar, who was the teacher of Paramahansa Yogananda, who really spoke to this. And, you know, he posited that back at the beginning of the cycle, which is, just to jump ahead, we are a little bit more than halfway through this cycle. We've come through the actual nadir of the full 26,000-year cycle about 300 years ago, at the time of the American and French revolutions. But it's been posited that at the beginning of the cycle, we had abilities and what we now call the clair skills. There was telepathy. People were actually telepathic, and as the yugas unfolded over the first, you know, 10,000-15,000 years, that those abilities were lost, and that's when writing and language, you know, came into place. It's a cycle. We're headed back up again, but we're a good 8,000 or 10,000 years out until we come back up to that golden age that once existed. You know, you look on the planet, Bob, and there are structures on this planet that we can't explain, whether it's the pyramids or Stonehenge or Göbekli Tepe. You know, there's many of them, and they're all made out of stone. All that survived was made out of stone, you know, and think about, you know, 20,000 years ahead from our time, what's going to remain? I suggest that, yeah, there will be things of stone and also, unfortunately, plastic. I think that that's very telling.
Yes, that's true.
Right?
That's
right?
True.
So we have no way of explaining how these structures, who built them, how they got here, what their meaning is. I just know that the pyramids were not tombs.
Of course they weren't. Of course they weren't. You're absolutely right. Are they? Could you call them astronomical calendars?
I think that they were energy generators of some kind.
Yes. So much is going on right now about the Great Pyramid. It's amazing. What we used to think of, all the energy being on the inside of the pyramid, now we're beginning to find out that it's the energy outside of the pyramid that the pyramid is putting out. Right. This is amazing what's going on. Unfortunately, some of the folks that were allegedly Egyptologists are certainly hung up on it totally being a tomb, and that is it. Zahi Hawass is basically the guy that stands for this all the time. He has been caught stealing various elements from the Great Pyramid, et cetera, et cetera. And now he's being pushed by the New York Times as being someone who really knows what's going on. He doesn't. He has stood in the way of all of the work of my friends who have worked there for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to bring that up. It's just I get so upset by this because he is certainly prevented us from getting to what we knew was coming in regards to underneath the Sphinx and underneath the right paw of the Sphinx. And that, of course, the Sphinx is far older than we ever thought. It's now at least 8,000 to anywhere between 8 and 15,000, even maybe 20,000. So we are just don't know very much about Egyptology because the Egyptologists didn't pay attention to Egyptology. Excuse me, I shouldn't have put it that way.
You've raised an interesting aspect of the Uranian and Aquarian dynamic as well, because Uranus is associated with Prometheus, and Prometheus is forward-looking, progressive, but there, you know, at any given time, there are a third of the people on the planet who have a dominant Uranus in their chart who want things to change, but they want things to go back to the way they used to be.
Yeah.
And there's a third who want that progressive change, who want things to go forward towards a future that they are dreaming and imagining. And then there's a third that are on the fence in the middle.
Well, that's time out on the playing field, I understand, for my boss. on 21st Century Radio with our guest, Daniel Fireson. Is This the Aquarian Age? You got to get a copy of this book. It took me a while to read it over and over and over again, but this guy really knows what he is talking about. So we'll be seeing you guys back in a few minutes.
This is 21st Century Radio with Bob Hieronymus, and I'm Mark Thurston, author of Discovering Your Soul's Purpose, Finding Your Path in Life and Work and Personal Mission, the Edgar Cayce Way. You can learn more about Edgar Cayce's work at edgarcayce.org. And I just want to say that I think Bob is living his soul's purpose with this fabulous radio show.
Our guest is Daniel Fireson, and we are talking about his book, Is This the Aquarian Age? An evolutionary astrology forecast available at Amazon.com. You need to get a copy of this book. Get a couple of copies because your friends are going to steal yours, even if you do it. Are you with us, Daniel?
I'm right here, Bob.
Okay. What is the relevance of biblical prophecy?
Well, you know, I've always been on the fence about the Bible, Bob. I have to, you know, admit it. I was raised, you know, in one religion and, you know, moved away towards Eastern religions as I grew older. And I really didn't hold the Bible, you know, for the most part to hold much credence. But I have come to understand that, for instance, you know, the first five books of the Bible that were written in Hebrew. Hebrew is a mystical symbolic language. It's kind of like astrology. Mm-hmm. Each letter in the Hebrew alphabet is an entire dimension. It has meanings. It's not just a letter like A. It has great depth. So there are esoteric meanings and intentions that are hidden behind most of the liturgy. You know, the early liturgy. I don't want to denigrate anybody's religious beliefs, but I think, you know, what happened, you know, after the fall of the Roman Empire really was not necessarily a positive direction. I think that, you know, patriarchy really began to take over to an even greater degree than it had, you know, in the Greek and Roman civilizations. And it just entrenched itself with its own belief structure that has come down to us to today. When I talk about prophecy, I look at some of the old Hebrew prophets and what they had to say, you know, and again, you know, it's hard to really get a clear message because they have been translated, and the translations were based on whatever they understood that word or those phrases to mean at that time. So again, it's kind of like a game of telephone, you know, where people pass a message along, and the message gets construed or gets hijacked, you know, for some group's personal agenda, but. What is surprising and really what kind of woke me up a little bit is that I never and I'm going out on a limb here. I'm going to be honest with you. I never really believed in the concept of an Antichrist. I just had trouble with it. But about a year or 2 years ago, we were watching a video. I guess it was a YouTube that was put together by a group of investigative journalists in Ireland. And they went to the museum in Israel where the Dead Sea Scrolls are stored, and they began to look at the original scripture from Isaiah. And Isaiah, and don't hold my feet to the fire here. I can't remember how many prophecies there were. I think that there were 10 or 12 prophecies, and this video progressed through each of these prophecies, and every one of them had come true. And then they came up to the last two prophecies, actually last three. One was that there would be a withdrawal from it was Trump who pulled out of the arms agreement with Iran. Was also one of the prophecies. One of the major prophecies was the refounding of the State of Israel, which was monumental. And it also implies the rebuilding of the Third Temple, which they've actually already started to build. So every one of these has come to pass. The last of the prophecies was about the lawless one. And when they started to talk about the lawless one, I jumped out of my seat. I mean, I don't have to tell our listeners who fits that bill to a T, who has taught us what lawlessness means and has been the role model for lawlessness, you know, in our field of, you know, experience, you know, since 2016. So it's hard to ignore. And there are times, Bob, when I say to myself that, you know, somehow maybe we're just pushing back against prophecy.
That's an interesting idea. Well, I was going to be a priest. I had probably went through the same questions that you did concerning the Bible and everything else that was I was being led to believe. And finally, fortunately, I became involved in other aspects of higher consciousness that made it much easier for me to avoid going in that direction of having to depend upon biblical prophecy from that standpoint. So I have a very strong feeling about that. How does Native American prophecy come into play?
Oh, it's very, very interesting. My source here is a writer named Jamie Sams, which some of your listeners may or you know be familiar with. But Jamie wrote a book called "There Were Counts of Fires Here Before Ours." And she has compiled through a semi nonfiction or fictional account, kind of like a Dan Brown novel, if you would, the unfolding of the Native American mythology, that there were three worlds that were here that were destroyed before this fourth world, and the first world corresponds directly to the beginning of the precession of the yugas, the precession of the equinoxes, to that golden age. And the following two worlds were digressions from that enlightened state. And then here we are in the fourth world. The good news is that according to Hopi prophecy, the fourth world will disappear as the fifth world is emerging. They're not saying that the fourth world is going to be totally destroyed. But we can see what we are going through with our climate change and what's happening politically and, disease. There's no question that there is a disintegration that's happening to the planet itself. My sense of it actually is, you know, I believe that the Earth is the greatest healer of any of us. You know, we're all self-healers. We can heal ourselves of anything. I think that the Earth really is holds that power and is capable of it, far exceeding any of us. So I have faith in the planet. Do I have faith, you know, that we will all survive, you know, whatever could happen here? I'm not so sure. Not so sure.
I don't know why you would think that, though.
Right.
Did the Native Americans use astrology in any way?
It's interesting. The Hopis don't have a word for religion. It's so embedded. Their spirituality is so embedded in their lifestyle. They don't have a separate word for it. They don't really have an astrology, so to speak. They have followed the stars. They're very much aware of it. Just in terms, they've had to have survived for centuries for their agriculture, their own survival. There is a place here in New Mexico, which is probably one of my favorite places on the planet. It's called Chaco Canyon. You've probably heard of it.
I've heard of it.
And it is an entirely remarkable place because the buildings that are there, they're called great houses. First of all, it wasn't a habitation because it was in use. There were individuals there for over 500 years, but there are less than 100 burials in the canyon itself. But the walls of some of these great houses are aligned due north and due south, kind of like the Great Pyramid. And not only that, but they point to other structures that are 15, 20, 30 miles away over mountain ranges. How did they accomplish this? You know, we can just about do this now from space, but they did it on the ground. Okay,
mm-hmm.
they constructed roads that radiate out from Chaco that are 20 yards wide. They're hard to see on the ground, but when you're up above, you can make them out. And they travel straight as an arrow for 100 miles. Whoa. They went over mountain ranges and actually carved steps up the mountainside, over the hillside, right, and over it, and continued onward. It's just remarkable.
That is remarkable.
Right. So, you know, what kind of technology did they have, and what knowledge of the skies did they utilize in order to accomplish this engineering? And it obviously required observation over hundreds of years in order to really be, you know, figure it out. I come back to the belief that the knowledge was here long before us. And it has always, you know, been held in, you know, sacred, sacred space by certain individuals throughout time. It's always been there. It's just that it's been hidden.
Yes, it had to have been, probably. What do you think they were trying to point to with those roads?
I think that they were ingresses from outliers from other communities, and they would come together for ritual and ceremony.
Oh, okay. Well, now we're getting ready for a final break of this hour, but I want to touch on this. At least begin it. What are some of the major astrological events this year that pertain to the Aquarian age?
Well, the big one is that the major aspects this year are to Jupiter and Saturn in Aquarius. Jupiter is squaring at Uranus. Uranus is the ruler of Aquarius, and Saturn right now, actually 2 days ago, squared Uranus. No, excuse me, it's next week. But Saturn and Uranus in Aquarius, squaring Uranus in Taurus, is a major Aquarian dynamic. It's because the planets are in Uranus's sign, and they're forming a crisis aspect. A square is a crisis. Its intent is to dislodge something that is stuck, literally, that's just frozen in time and space, and to release it so that there can be progress forward.
Well, we'll have to hold the rest till next hour. Our guest, by the way, friends, is Daniel Fiverson. And is this the Aquarian age? I always want to read that another way, and that's the reason why I slow down. An evolutionary astrology forecast available at Amazon.com. Order the book and find our guest links on our Facebook page and 21st Century Radio. And don't miss a show. Subscribe and share 21st Century Radio on YouTube. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and my executive producer and research assistant is Laura Kortner. Our engineer is Anita Brockington. 2021, is this the Aquarian Age? An evolutionary astrology forecast available at Amazon.com. Yes, we want you to buy this book. Are you with us there, Daniel?
I'm right here, Bob.
Okay. Let's see, where did we leave off with the astrological events that pertain to the Aquarian age? You hit on the first one, right?
All right. Well, in order to really understand this and build the story, I'd like to go back about 60 years.
Okay, do it.
Okay, and I wanted, you know,
and take your time.
Go back to the 60s, you know, and you know, looking at, you know, some of your interests, I think that you are as much a student of the 60s as I am, a product of the 60s. Timothy Leary was wrong. I do remember the 60s. I was there. okay, so let's look at the astrology first. I want to look at three planets because they hold all of the information that we're looking for.
Okay.
So the first is Uranus that I've described. Uranus is the individuation process where we become who we intend to become. Leo and the sun, that's our personality, but our personality grows, and it grows into that Aquarian individuation state. Pluto is the evolutionary engine itself. It's what continues to move us forward. Like I said, evolution is not a theory, it's a fact. And we are always moving forward, even if we think we're stuck or we're moving backward or we're not moving at all. And the third is Eris, which was only discovered in 2008. And it's an important player. And I'm going to come to that because it's got an amazing story. So back in the 1960s, the reason the 60s were as intense as they were is because in the late 60s, the planet Uranus, which takes 84 years to orbit the sun, and the planet Pluto, which takes 248 years to orbit the sun, came together in what is known as a conjunction. And that conjunction of the evolutionary engine itself driving the individuation process is what created the 60s. It was the war protests. It was the peace sit-ins. It was the assassinations of JFK, MLK, and Bobby Kennedy. All of these things were that Uranus Pluto awakening, because Uranus is also an awakening. It wakes us up. In 2015, the planets moved into what is known as a square. They, instead of being at 0 degrees from each other, they were now 90 degrees. They were at the what would be a quarter moon position between the two of them. And in 2016, Donald Trump was elected. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And now we have Jupiter and Saturn. Jupiter is about to leave Aquarius briefly. It's gonna move into Pisces, but it's gonna come back into Aquarius later in the year. Jupiter moves through a sign, you know, once a year. Saturn is 7 years, so you know Jupiter was very quickly. Things that Jupiter does are important because whatever Jupiter touches, it makes bigger. It's the Midas touch, and astrologers tend to think of you know, it turns everything to gold. It doesn't make everything better. It just makes everything bigger. Okay. So Jupiter comes along back in January of 2020, and it was conjunct Saturn. That combination has always been a pandemic, okay? And we had COVID, all right?
Oh.
And then at the end of last year, actually in December, Jupiter and Saturn conjoined, came together at 0 degrees, at the same point in the sky, in Aquarius. And, you know, that's one of the indications that, you know, is this the Aquarian age? That's really what triggered, you know, my title for the 2021
sure.
forecast that I wrote.
Yeah.
Because we had the Jupiter, which is the planet of expansion and growth and making things bigger, combining with the planet Saturn, which compresses everything and makes everything, one is expansion, one is contraction. Those two planets are what the astrologers who follow economic trends, those are the two planets they look at to gauge market trends. So that's the way last year began, and that's the way this year began. But there's another very important player at the undercurrent here that almost nobody's paying attention to it. And I've been writing about this since 2015. And it is dwarf planet Eris, which was discovered in 2008. Now, Eris mythologically was the goddess, the Greek goddess of chaos and discord, and she is responsible for the Trojan War. I don't know if you know the story of the golden apple and the contests between the three goddesses of Athena, Hera, who am I missing? Athena, Hera, and Aphrodite.
Aphrodite.
And there was a contest with Paris of Troy, and he was Zeus chose him to be the judge, and he chose Athena, Athena's gift to him, reward to him, was the most beautiful woman in the world, which was Helen of Troy. Unfortunately, Helen was married to Menelaus, the king of Sparta, but the two of them ran off to Troy together and started the Trojan War. Eris is made culpable for that war event. At the end of the Trojan War, all of the Greek heroes that we know of were all in the underworld. Mercury, Hermes led them down into the underworld. Odysseus visits them in the Odyssey. The Greek classical age ended with the end of the Trojan War. And that's where most people have ended the story, and they blame Eris for that outcome. But something else happened at the end of the Trojan War. there was a member of the Trojan royal family, and his name was Aeneas. And anybody who studies any mythology has heard of Aeneas before. Aeneas left Troy, sailed to Italy, and he was the founder of Rome. He founded a civilization that lasted for 1,000 years. Mm. All right. Yeah. So this is Eris. Eris is two times the distance is, how do I explain this? The distance from the sun to Pluto, she's twice as far out from the sun as Pluto is in the solar system. That's why she was so difficult to spot. As a matter of fact, when they first saw her, they thought that she was a star because she moved so slowly. She has a 500-year orbit around the sun, but it's highly elliptical, which means that it spends at different times, a graduated period of time in each zodiacal sign in her orbit. And the sign that she spends the most time in is the sign of Aries, where she is now. She entered, it's 129 years, and she entered Aries in 1927. Okay, beginning to see some light here.
Yeah.
1929, we had the Great Depression, mm-hmm. and then we had the rise of fascism in Europe and World War II.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
She is still in Aries. She's been there since 1927. Within that cycle of her 129 years in Aries, the planet Uranus actually meets up with her twice. And the first Uranus-Eris conjunction occurred in 1928. The minute Eris entered Aries, it's a tongue twister, Uranus was right there. And that's what caused the Great Depression and the wars. It created that discord and chaos and extreme violence, because she is extreme violence. Well, she came back again in 2015. And we got Donald Trump, and we get the school shootings and the gun shootings, which are 2 weeks ago, every single day, there was some kind of mass shooting somewhere in the United States. This is Eris, okay? To make the story even more intense is that there is an aspect now from Eris from Pluto. And again, they meet up very infrequently because both of their orbits are very elliptical. Pluto is in the sign of Capricorn, and it's been there, went into Capricorn in 2008. It's when we had the first stock market crash. And Pluto will stay in Capricorn until 2013, when he will also move into Aquarius with Saturn. So at any rate, a square is a little technical here, but this particular aspect from Pluto to Eris in the signs that they are currently in has not occurred in 2,700 years. Mm. It was what was known as the Axial Age, 700 BC, and at 700 BC, Homer, Buddha, Pythagoras and Lao Tzu were on the planet.
Yes, that's
the
right.
Great thought streams of Western civilization came onto the planet the last time Pluto squared Eris from Capricorn to Aries.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
This to me is the base note of our time. Okay. There are two more squares coming up this year. Let me just look at my notes to get my dates right.
We want to be accurate, so.
Okay, in May and in October.
May and October?
Yes.
Whoa.
We had one square in October, in May. Actually, we just had it a couple of weeks ago, and we have one more coming up in October. What's important to understand about astrological cycles, Bob, is that the timing is not anywhere what anybody thinks it is. Everybody looks at their chart if they know it, and they watch the transits, and they say, oh my God, Saturn is squaring my sun today or something. These are long-term cycles. And when the cycle is complete, when they're done interacting with each other, that's when the fun really begins, okay? The Jupiter-Saturn cycle that began in January of last year is a 30-year cycle.
Whoa.
And the Jupiter-Saturn cycle that happened in December of last year is a 12 to 15-year cycle, depending on the irregularity of the, of their orbits. So these are long-term cycles. The aspects that we have had in the past couple of years are the most intense of this decade. And there isn't anything like it for another 5 or 10 years. The only major things that are going to happen going down the road looking forward are as these outer planets, as Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto change signs and move into the next sign. There aren't going to be any big squares and oppositions and aspects between them for quite some time. However, there's a lot going on, and I'd also like to look at how this looks to the chart of the United States itself. But I'll come back to that in a minute.
Would you please? Yes.
Excuse me. Let me just take a drink of water.
Okay, I'll take a. Oh, we're going to take a break anyway. My Paul says on 21st Century Radio, and we'll be right back after we all drink some water.
Hello, folks. This is Peter Rowan. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with my dear friend Bob Hieronymus. Thanks for listening.
Our guest, of course, is Daniel. I always like to think of him as Daniel because he's in the Lion's Den, you know. Fiverson, of course. 2021, is this the Aquarian Age? An evolutionary astrology forecast available on Amazon.com. Obviously, you got to get a copy of that book. Get at least two copies so that you can lend one to a friend, because once you do, you'll never get it back. All right. Now, could you tell us what's happening right now with the U.S. chart?
Yes. Yeah. This really brings it into focus, Bob. I have to preface this by saying that I have gone rogue with which birth chart of the United States that I use. I use a chart that's actually 1 year before July 4th, 1776, because on July 5th, 1775, On July 6th, 1775, the Second Continental Congress passed an act to, quote, bear arms against Great Britain. And up until that time, all of the skirmishes between the Redcoats and the Minutemen had been defensive actions, holding off the British. But on that day, they decided, no, we're gonna raise a standing army. They hired George Washington as the commander-in-chief, and they went to war. And from my understanding of, how countries evolve, when a colony declares war against the mother country, I think that it ceases to be a colony. And on that day, the United States actually became a sovereign entity. They took up arms against the greatest military power on the planet. And I don't think they had the confidence to really brag about it too much. By the following July, they had survived the winter at Valley Forge. They had survived. They'd made it, and they had enough confidence. It was the country's first birthday, and they were able to announce to the world that they were an independent country. That's just my purview. There are other astrologers, but they're in the minority who agree with me. But that being said, there are two events which are occurring right now to that chart, which explain everything from my perspective. One of them is what is known as the Pluto return, and some of your listeners may have heard of that, and the other is the Neptune opposition. A Neptune opposition is what occurs when the transiting Neptune, where Neptune in the sky on today is in a 100-degree aspect to where Neptune was on July 6, 1775. That happened in the years leading up to the Civil War. The U.S. Pluto return has never happened before because it's Pluto's orbit's 248 years. Nobody's alive who really remembers, what happened in 1775 and 76, but that's when the last one was. And we've already had two returns. They've already happened. I say to some of my colleagues, look around at the world if this is not what the Pluto return is going to look like, what is it that you're expecting? You see, I believe in observation and correlation, Bob. That's how I work with a chart. That's how I work with daily transits. That's how I work with all of it. You have to observe and correlate it to the sky. You can't just take what's in the sky and say, well, X, Y, Z, this is what's happening. You have to look at what's happening down here on the ground, because we are the reflection of what's happening up above. So we are moving through a time frame in American history that correlates to both the American Revolution and the Civil War. Racism, xenophobia, misogyny, those were all the things that we fought for in the 1860s and during that war. You know, most Americans don't realize that more American men died in the Civil War than in all other American wars combined. There were more deaths on 2 days at Gettysburg than on D-Day. People don't know this, their history.
They sure don't.
And we are coming, it's coming around again. It's here. What do you think happened on January 6th at the Capitol? This is what's happening. Okay? Neptune opposition. Neptune is about our beliefs. And Neptune is also about collective delusion. You know, QAnon. I don't want to get into politics. But it's all here. It's all on the surface now. It's coming out. It's all been exposed. And it's all working to resolve itself. But clearly, you know, misogyny came over on the Mayflower. Slavery came over on the Mayflower, Bob. You know, our founding fathers, Jefferson, Adams, Washington, they all had slaves.
That's true.
Okay. Right.
That's true.
This is our real history, and it's probably in your founding fathers' book. People don't understand this. They think of Thomas Jefferson as some great democratic hero. He wasn't. So it's all coming around to be healed. You know, there's a quote by Paulo Coelho. You know, he said it's all going to be okay in the end. If it isn't okay, it's because it's not the end.
That's one way to find out.
Right.
By the way, what role does UFO disclosure play in all of this?
Well, think about that. I think when it finally is revealed, it's not going to be anything less than the second coming. I mean, think about it. It is going to be the most mind-blowing revelation of our place in the universe since the beginning of time. It's just off the scale.
It is.
Totally off the scale. It's going to change everything.
Yes, and all of those people that came out and tried to talk about this for so many decades that got either beat up or thrown in jail or murdered. It was all a waste of their life. It's unfortunate.
Right.
But that's how we handle things. So many people that I know that were threatened by this whole thing, you couldn't even talk about it. And if you did, then you were someone that they could attack and that kind of thing. They destroyed so many people's reputations after they saw a UFO and they talked about it. And some of them lost their lives just because of that. Jeez, a whiz. And it's all your fault.
Exactly. But God bless them for having the courage to speak to it. And really, that's what Uranus is. Uranus is courage. You know, Uranus stole fire from Zeus, and he gave it to man. I mean, for that, he got pinned to a mountain, and a bird came and ate at his heart every single day. I mean, think about it. It takes courage to really speak your truth.
That's true, and it takes a great deal of courage to do it. And because you can lose your life, especially now, for saying something about just our former president.
Right.
Because he is all about that kind of stuff from the standpoint of. The big lie, and I do believe it is a big lie. It's a huge lie, and it's going to cost. We'll straighten it out. That's how I feel.
We will, but it's going to take work, and it's going to take people who have the passion and the sense of purpose.
That's right.
To keep working towards it. But it'll happen. It's because evolution is a fact. It's not a theory.
Mm-hmm.
But it's what we have to go through.
Yes,
we're that fish crawling up on the beach and learning how to walk.
Yes, remember the axolotl?
Right.
The axolotl fish who had feet? Oh, I'm sorry. I got excited by that because I thought it was a joke at first, but then I saw one and it changed everything. So you have mentioned Trump before, but what role does Trump play in all of this from the standpoint, in your perspective?
He's a homeopathic remedy. He is outing all the racism and the xenophobia. The problem is that he's given people a purpose. Given them permission to be racist. He's literally, given them permission. That means it's come out from the closet. It's no longer closeted anymore. People are openly, spouting their hate. Well, it's a healing crisis. It's a fever. You can't get well unless you have a fever, and until that fever breaks. And he is the catalyst for it. Whether he is the Antichrist, I don't know. I really don't know. I can't really make a firm determination on that because it's still unfolding. But the man is Teflon. They can't seem to pin anything on him, and that's a little scary. It's very scary.
Well, he certainly has taken advantage of that, and those who are totally ignorant have taken advantage of that.
Right.
Have you looked at his chart, Trump's chart?
Donald Trump was, a lot of astrologers say that his chart is someone who was born to have a huge downfall. It's what we're all kind of praying for. But so far it hasn't happened. And maybe it will happen in the end. But how much damage will he do before it actually comes about?
That's the big problem.
Right.
Because he has created, and it's still going on from that standpoint.
Right, exactly.
What role did the COVID play? You touched on that a little earlier.
Well, COVID, from my perspective, is also a kind of a cultural homeopathic. Homeopathic is like heals like, and like cures like. And, it's made us realize what's really essential. We're still, unfortunately going to experience supply chain shortages. We're seeing, I think that there's a false sense of security that somehow the vaccine is going to fix everything. It's because we live in a fix me society. You can eat whatever you want. It's too much cholesterol. You go to the doctor and he gives a prescription. You take a pill. Self-care has never been the real overall practice, medical practice in our country. Most people just, go on and do what they want to do. And they go to the doctor when, it's only as a last resort. We have to learn to take care of ourselves. We have to learn to be responsible for ourselves. That's Saturn. That's one of the aspects of Saturn in Aquarius is taking responsibility for ourselves. It's maturity. It's recognizing. I'm sure you remember the Hopi message from Oribi. Back in, what was it, in 2002, 2001, they said, nobody's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves.
That's right. Yes.
And that's what COVID is about. And that's what this transit of Uranus in Taurus of self-preservation and self-responsibility and self-love, to care about yourself enough to be willing to take care of yourself, not to just, do whatever you want to do and then, go get a shot or go get a, or take a pill or, go for some therapy. We have to go down into our own shadow. We have to, do the work. It's a very Plutonian process. We have to go down into that underworld, and that's where we're going. We have to experience the shadow before we can, really rise again into the light.
Well, one of the things that I've also found fascinating in your book, I'm trying to get to the very back here. Oh, I can't find it. Darn it. Are we taking a break? I'll look for it again. Must be Mercury retrograde today. Well, actually, for a while.
Yeah, it is. Until the 22nd.
There we go. All right, let's take a break here on 21st Century Radio, and we'll return with our guest, Daniel Fiverson. Is this the Aquarian Age? An evolutionary astrology forecast available at Amazon.com. Find more about our guests on the Facebook page for 21st Century Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more after this.
This is Paul David, producer, director of Jesus in India, the movie. You are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Visit me at JesusInIndiaTheMovie.com.
Thank you. I am Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and this is 21st Century Radio. We've been doing this weekly interview show for over 30 years. Let's rejoin with our guest now. I did find what I was looking for, and that is this. How does the painful political polarity we are experiencing in the United States and elsewhere open the potential for spiritual awakening and greater consciousness?
Okay, you're asking me.
Yes, sir.
Is that okay? Well, it is exposing what's really wrong, been wrong with our culture for so many years. We are tasked with circumstances that are just up against a wall. I'm looking for the word here. There's it's a choiceless awareness. We can only make certain choices. The choices that we made in the past that have resulted in the climate change, that have resulted in the gun violence, that have resulted in the xenophobia and misogyny in our world, are obsolete. We're coming to the end of the line, you know, with those kinds of choices. We have to make different choices. We have to change our behavior, and being frightened out of our wits, perhaps by COVID or Donald Trump, or the threat of war. And that's the other issue that, we haven't even touched on. There's an inconvenient truth in American history that every time the planet Uranus has been in the sign of Gemini, the United States has been in war. It happened at the American Revolution. It happened at World War One, and it's back again. So here we are, facing an alignment of BRIC nations. This G7 has actually concretized them even more. It's pulled China and Russia closer together and pushed them farther away from the West. And we're just, there's just this alignment of alliances, which is, taking place, which is reminiscent of what happened at the beginning of World War One, where, one shoe falls and all the dominoes go down. So it's a very tenuous world that we're moving through, and we're learning to walk through this minefield because it's a matter of survival. We have to be careful where we step. We have to be careful what we do, what we think, and especially how we act. Especially since there's so many people out there who are just overrunning boundaries that nobody ever believed anybody would cross. So it is taking things, to the limit. And when they get to the limit, there's only one direction they can go. They have to go in a new direction. It's the end of the line for a lot of this behavior and these beliefs, which is what we're dealing with.
Well, I had a dear friend who was an astrologer a long time ago by the name of Dane Rudger, who used to teach at our school. What is the crisis in consciousness that was labeled by astrologer Dane Rudger? I think that's on page 38 there.
Yeah. Dane Rudger was the first astrologer, its first books that I ever read back in the 70s. I had to read them three times to begin to understand what he was saying.
Yeah, that's true.
And even now when I read them, I find myself rereading whole paragraphs. But there are two kinds of crises. There's a crisis in consciousness and a crisis in action. A crisis in action occurs more or less at the beginning of a cycle, at the first quarter of the circle, where we recognize that we have to make some elemental changes in order to keep moving forward towards whatever it is we intended to happen or we're intending towards at the beginning of the cycle. When we come to the third quarter or last quarter square, which is the 270-degree point in the circle, that's the crisis in consciousness. That's the crisis in beliefs. That's where we have to recognize that there's something about what we believe or what we're doing that must change before we can close that cycle and actually complete our intention. Mm-hmm. So we're having both of those occurrences occurring. The squares from Jupiter and Saturn to Uranus are both crisis in action, where the choices that we're making and our lack of maturity, our lack of responsibility, our grandioseness are all coming into question in terms of how are we going to go forward? We can't go forward with as I have a Canadian friend. He says Americans are adolescent. There's an immaturity, a spiritual immaturity in our country, and it's got to change. We have to grow up spiritually.
Yes.
And the Pluto Eris square that I've been referring to, that's a last quarter square. That's the crisis in consciousness. And that's the hardest of all, because we cannot close the circle until we figure out this piece of it, until we get smarter, until we just wake up and recognize that there's something that we believe, or there's something that we think, or there's something that we are doing that's just preventing us from really pursuing or completing our original intention. Mm-hmm. And our intention is to grow. Our intention is to evolve and become more conscious. That's why we're here. We're doing it anyway. We learn through our emotional body, Bob. We only learn through direct emotional experience. We can be a smoker. We can be a reckless driver. We can fool around on our partners, our wives, our husbands, and thinking we're getting away with it. Okay, but there's always a consequence to be paid, and it's when that consequence occurs. It's when we wake up, in the middle of winter, and we can't breathe, or we have pneumonia, or we have bronchitis. Or when we come into a crisis because of the choices we've made and refuse to change, that's when we get it. Okay, when we're the one who gets diagnosed with cancer, and we stop eating all the sugar, and we stop eating all the processed foods and all the fast foods, that's when we get it. We will continue to go to McDonald's or Taco Bell and keep eating that stuff. We'll keep smoking. We'll keep coming home and drinking half a bottle of scotch every night until the day comes when our body just breaks down, or we mentally break. Something happens that we have no other alternative but to change. And this is unfortunately what we're going through. We're having a collective direct emotional experience about our health and about our important resources, about what's essential, about what we believe, about what we think, about what we say and do, to other people, how we treat others. It's all got to change. And it's not going to change until each one of us somehow gets it directly, some direct emotional experience of it.
Yes, yes. Well, I read in your bio, in regards to the private readings you do, your philosophy of astrology is not like some cookbook interpretation of who you are. Instead, you look at the birth chart in the context of how a particular life has unfolded. How does this reveal the why of events seen in the chart?
Because each of the archetypes in the chart has a light and a shadow expression. And the life experiences of the individual who comes for the reading will reveal to me how that archetype has expressed. If they have the moon in Aries, is this somebody who has repeatedly gone for anger management? Or is it somebody who has taken responsibility for themselves, for their emotional, their own emotional self-responsibility, emotional self-reliance? It all works both ways, and the context of somebody's life will reveal you know, the choices that they have made and why that has happened. Sometimes it's from a past life. Sometimes we just have trouble with some individual. You know, we may have hurt them and they hurt us. It's deep. It's got many, many layers. You know, we, from lifetime to lifetime, you know, we pick up where we left off. I think I said this. But we're spared the actual memory, mental memory of what has happened. But in the first 7 years of our life, up to the to our first Saturn square, it's you know it's kind of you know what it's you know it's very psychological. We are imprinted with the emotional template of what came before. The way we're treated by our parents, the way we're treated by our siblings, the way we're treated by our peers as we start to, you know, as a kid and go off to school. These are the reminders of what we've brought in with us. And they tell us, it's all in the chart. It will tell us, you know, if your mom was an alcoholic and your father beat you up and your uncle raped you. It's all in that chart. And why did it happen? It happened because of something from the past that remains unresolved that needs to be worked out. But it's something within us. It's not, you know, mm-hmm. it's not something that we can, you know, assign to somebody else and say that they're guilty of it, because it's our life that it happened in, and we have to come to terms with it.
Wow. Boy, what I have learned, not just tonight, but in reading your book, it is just an enormous amount of things that I need to review again and again, because when I was deeply involved in astrology a long time ago, that was some time ago, but I think the kind of quality of work you're doing, doing it this way, is extraordinary. And I want to look more into this, because I think it is. There's a great deal to this in regards to the longevity of your of being able to see the future.
I don't teach my clients my wisdom. I work with them to open up their own wisdom, to get them to see what they already know but have hidden from themselves, or have denied or excused, or thought they weren't good enough or they didn't deserve it. You know, these are all human natures. We all have all these insecurities, but yet we all have all these strengths that we've brought in with us. And it's learning to recognize what we have accomplished in the past, what we've brought that are our strengths that we have brought with us, that are all correlated to the weaknesses that we have. It's a match. It's a handoff. But we have to recognize it and begin to work with it. And I help people see this. I help them see what it is that not as a punishment. There's no judgment. You know, we've all had our, you know, SHI, you know what, mm-hmm. We've all gone through it, but that's how we have learned what we know. You know, we've learned it by, you know, accessing our own inner knowledge. And most of us, you know, we have that intuitive sense. We're just afraid, you know, we need somebody to support it, to expose it and really show it to us. And you know, get us to recognize, you know, where our purpose and our passion lies.
I want to return to a very important point in your book, and this forecast reveals the opportunities and remedies for the times we are continuing to pass through. Can you tell us more about this aspect of hope?
Yeah. Yes. The remedies are, you know, this Pluto and Capricorn. Capricorn is Saturn, and Saturn is responsibility. It's about taking responsibility. Nobody's coming to save us. We have to save ourselves one at a time. Each of us has to save ourselves. And as long as that takes, that's how long it's going to take.
That's more than interesting, because of some of the research that I've recently read about those alien beings that are on this planet, because they certainly are here. They've been here for a long time. They've always been here. That's part of their planet as well as ours, but we don't pay attention to that. We're pretty greedy when it comes to what we want. But, oh gosh, Rudy, I forgot exactly where we're headed with this one. What was that one? Hope. H-O-P-E. Yes, that's the thing I'm mostly trying to understand at this point, the aspect of hope in that?
The hope is that we have to dream our future. There are many probable futures that go out from this point in time, from the present. Unfortunately, all too often, the past becomes the present, and then that becomes the future as well. We have to break that chain. We have to reimagine what the past really was. Okay, so my uncle raped me. Well, it's okay. I got to get on with my life. I can't go through life carrying that cross that somehow I'm a martyr. It's the religions in the world, the savior and martyr complexes, the masochism, the sadism. We have to move past that and understand that whatever happens, it's happened, and it is in the past. We have to heal it in the present so we can go into the future with a whole different dream in mind.
Oh, thank you very much, and we're just about out of time. Thank you, Daniel Fiverson. 2021, is this the Aquarian Age? An evolutionary astrology forecast available on Amazon.com. Order the book and find our guest links on our Facebook page for 21st Century Radio.